This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 35 years after the Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade, abortion remains taboo, one of those things rarely spoken of. Not the issue, of course. Most everybody has an opinion about that. But relatively few women talk about their abortion with their family and friends, sometimes not even with their partners. It's rare on TV and at the movies, too. As in the current picture Juno, most of the debates about film pregnancies end in the delivery room. Well, today we hope to break this informal secrecy a little bit. If you had an abortion, have you talked about it? With why and with who? Have you told your kids? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also tell us your story on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's begin with a caller. And Jane joins us. Jane on the line from Miami in Florida.
Hello.
Hi, Jane. You're on the air.
Hi. I had an abortion 4 years ago when I was 20 years old, and I'm so glad that the option was there for me, but I didn't talk to anybody about it. I didn't talk to my parents. I didn't talk to my best friends. I have numerous siblings. I didn't tell any of them.
Did you talk with the boy, the father?
Yes. He knew, and along with one other close friend, the two of them knew, and when they offered their support afterwards, I pushed them away, because of guilt, it was hard for me to talk to anybody. The place that did it didn't really offer any counseling, and I think even at the time, if they had, I probably wouldn't have taken it.
So they treated it somewhat like a business-like operation?
They were sensitive, and they offered some form. They probably gave me phone numbers or something. Like I said, I probably wouldn't have been receptive to talking to anybody, even if they were right in front of my face.
Because of, you said, the guilt?
Maybe it was embarrassment. Like, I couldn't believe that I was in that position. It wasn't necessarily guilt for what I had done. I didn't feel like I had done anything wrong, but I, at the same time, I did feel like it wasn't something that I should openly be talking about, that I should just be quiet about it, because I don't know. It's not something. I'm so glad that you're doing this today, because it is something that people need to be able to talk about, and I think that women who do it in America are looked down upon.
Jane, thanks very much for the call. We know it isn't easy. And let's turn now to Aspen Baker, Executive Director of Exhale, an organization that provides an after-abortion counseling hotline. She joins us from the studio at the Journalism School at the University of California, Berkeley. And it's good to have you on the program today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I know you have some personal experience with this issue as well. Who did you talk with after your abortion?
I talked to a couple of different people, actually. I talked to a couple of girlfriends before I had the abortion. As you know, I was normally kind of a pretty happy-go-lucky kind of person. As a couple women that I worked with, and I was, you know, feeling really internal and inside myself and trying to decide. And I talked to a couple of them beforehand, and they, of course, had ended up having their own experiences with abortion and gave me a lot of sort of encouragement about it, you know, being okay. And afterwards, I was able to talk with them and some other friends. And then I sort of hit this point of like, well, they're probably sick of hearing about it now, you know, like I had the one or two, you know, conversations, one or two phone calls, and there was still a lot of feelings and stuff for me to figure out. But I sort of felt like I didn't want to burden them, I guess, with it anymore.
Didn't want to burden them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. And is how much longer after that did you start Exhale?
Exhale was founded about a year after I had my abortion, and we launched the talk line in the Bay Area 2 years after that in 2002.
And did that stem directly from your experience, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I expected, you know, it was really fantastic to hear from Jane in Florida, actually. And I think what she talked about is really incredibly common and something that we hear a lot on our talk line. You know, after my own abortion, and I talked to a couple of friends. I just felt really confused why it wasn't talked about more, or why, you know, the clinic hadn't offered me phone numbers or said, hey, you know, if you ever want to talk about it, here's some counselors that we recommend, or, you know, here's a support group, or here's a phone number. There wasn't anything like that offered. And I didn't understand that. And I didn't know why that was the case, especially after more than 30 years of legal abortion in this country. And so I just started doing some research and started talking to other people and other women, and found that my story was also really common, of people who felt like they had made the best decision that they could. And that for many of us, it was an incredibly hard decision to make, and the value and importance of having someone to listen. And so that led me on the path to figure out what it was that I could do to create more places or opportunities for people to tell their story, and to provide listeners to these women. And that eventually became the Exhale After Abortion talk line.
And are most of the women who call you, is this immediately after their abortion, or years afterwards, like Jane's call?
I would say the majority of people that call our line call within a few months after having an abortion. And it definitely relates to the way that we do outreach. You know, the main way that people learn about our service is that they do get a direct referral from the place where they got their abortion. And so now, you know, 6 years later after our service launched, clinics across the country do refer to Exhale as part of their procedures and their protocols. So people hear about us, you know, right away. But we absolutely have talked to women years later and even decades later after an abortion.
Here's an email we have from Alicia in Phoenix. I had an abortion 6 years ago at the age of 44. It was very difficult, painful, and very depressing. I did talk to close friends about it. One thing I noticed, though, is that everybody seemed to have a big opinion about my decision. It was as if this very personal experience became fair game for discussion, regardless of how it might have affected me. The opinions went into both extremes of pro and con, and a lot of unsolicited advice was given as well. No other personal experience I've had in my life inspired such a vivid reaction in others. If I should ever have to have an abortion again, unlikely at this point, I would probably keep it even more private so as not to have to endure as much judgment. Do the women you talk to talk about judgment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that is exactly why we started the Exhale talk line, because people call Exhale because they often don't have other people in their lives who can really listen to them without judgment. You know, people hear abortion and they go right away to their own values, their own opinions, and their own thoughts on, you know, whether it should be legal or not, the morality. And somewhere in that whole debate, this woman, this person that you know, that is your sister, that is your friend, and her experience and her story and her feelings get lost. And that happens in so many places in our social climate. And I think what Exhale stands for and what we really understand is that everyone's experience with abortion is unique, that there are a range of feelings after an abortion, and that range of feelings are normal, and that there is no one-size-fits-all solution. And so what can be incredibly healing and transformative is just listening to that person and letting them speak their truth.
Another woman who listens to other women is Terry Reiser, a marriage and family therapist in Westlake Village in California. She joins us now from member station KCLU in Thousand Oaks, California. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
And why does it take years for some women to come to a decision where they begin to talk about their abortion?
Oh, gosh, I think your two gals that you've had on so far have really eloquently stated the case. There are several reasons I think it takes their blocks to this grieving process. There's no external evidence. If a woman loses a 2-year-old or 16-year-old, you have pictures, you have memorabilia, you have lots of things that are part of a normal grieving process. There's no public forum. As I'm so sorry, I didn't catch the name of the gal from Exhale.
Aspen Baker.
Aspen. Okay. Aspen said it plainly. There really is no public forum. There's no recognized right or expectation that a post-abortion woman will grieve the end of a pregnancy that she herself decided on. And there is a lot of judgment that can come with that. She said that quite nicely. There's not a support system. A lot of women do this in secret. There's a mixture of shame and embarrassment, as Jane talked about. There is a very instinctual place that a woman goes to when she finds out she's pregnant, oftentimes I find that the abortion decision is made in a flurry of time pressure to make a decision quickly for medical reasons, and feelings are not often explored. The circumstances dictate oftentimes, and there's not a lot of counseling preparation done, and so she is very confused about why she feels badly or guilty or embarrassed or secretive about a decision that she made at the time. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of prep given to them to prepare them for these feelings.
So the discussion that does occur, you're suggesting, occurs before the decision is made, is about whether to do it or not, and then afterwards it's sort of not talked about.
Well, I think that the discussion beforehand is really based on much about the medical necessity to make a decision fairly quickly before you get into that second trimester. It's really surrounding a lot of the circumstances, not a lot of time. You don't have the luxury of a lot of time to explore her feelings. If your circumstances were different, how would you feel about doing this? And those are the kind of things that she grapples with after, a long time afterwards.
Aspen Baker, do you find that time pressure to the decision to make the abortion in the first trimester, did that play a factor?
In my personal experience or in the callers?
The callers you talked to, yes.
I think obviously time is a big part of how people make the decision. And I think Terry was right when she said, you know, the circumstances and the reality of people's lives and the kind of resources that they have available to them. And my experience in listening to our callers is even when people feel sad or loss or grief, that there is this sense and understanding that they made the best decision they could at the time with the resources that they had available to them. And so how do you then move to a place of understanding, of reconciliation, of emotional well-being? And I think that's something that's incredibly important for every woman to know, is that emotional well-being after an abortion is possible for every person that has experienced one.
Aspen Baker and Terry Reiser will stay with us. We hope you join us. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here's an email we got from Laura in Chicago. I saw a woman once in Berkeley, California, wearing a black T-shirt that simply said, "I had an abortion." I admired her bravery. Ever since then, I've dreamed of a magical event where for one day, every single woman who's gone through that choice, that experience, would wear that shirt. It wouldn't be like a red letter branding us. Rather, there would be a critical mass of women. I'm sure everyone would be shocked to see women they know, teachers, grandmothers, religious figures, friends, Democrats, Republicans, and it would provide an instant community. That would be awesome. On the 35th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision, we're talking about what a lot of women and a lot of men don't talk about either. Abortions. If you've gone through this experience, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Who did you talk with about it and why, or didn't you talk with somebody about it? Our guests are Aspen Baker, Executive Director of Exhale, an organization that provides after-abortion counseling hotline, and Terry Reiser, a marriage and family therapist who's got a private practice in Westlake Village, California. And again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And let's go to Michael. Michael's with us from Michigan. Michelle, excuse me.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to share that I had had an abortion when I was 15, and it was 32 years ago. And really, at the time, I felt like it was okay. But as the years went on, I've just had so much guilt over it that I can't hardly get past it. I cry about it every time I think about it. I've never allowed myself to have children because I felt like I didn't deserve any because I killed one. It's just very difficult.
You've never allowed yourself to have children because you feel guilty.
I feel guilty because I've taken a life. I killed a baby.
And have you spoken with anybody about this?
No, I don't. I'm really ashamed of myself. I don't speak to nobody about it.
There's no reason to be ashamed of yourself. None reason at all. As you've heard, other women find it very difficult to talk to people about it, but maybe if you did speak to a counselor about it, it might help you.
My husband thinks that I need to get past it, that I should forget about it and go on, but it's hard to forget about that.
There are things that it's...
Like, I feel like the Lord has forgiven me, but I can't forgive myself.
Well, again, I would urge you. Well, we've got two people here who would have better advice than I do. Terry Reiser, Michelle can't be the only person like this you've heard from.
What Michelle just said, I can forgive myself, but God, I think God can forgive me, but I can't forgive myself, is probably the most common thing that I hear from anyone who has any kind of a religious, spiritual part of their landscape. Not to sound like I'm doing a shameless plug, but Michelle, if you do nothing else, please order a copy of my book, A Solitary Sorrow. The whole purpose of writing that book was to help women like you who were grieving in a prolonged way in secret, could go get something and read it privately. And 32 years is way too long, my dear. Hmm. Aspen, you can get past this.
Aspen Baker, you must hear from women like Michelle, too.
We do hear from women like Michelle, and I agree with Terry that that is absolutely something that we hear on our talk line, that that belief that God has forgiven them, that they can't find a way to do it for themselves. And I think that, you know, the long grief and the keeping herself from other experiences like having children, which it sounds like something that she may have wanted in her life and hasn't allowed her to, and the punishment that she's been forcing upon herself. That's a really hard place to be. And I think, you know, for each of us that have heard that story, and as we sit here and we think about it and we think about what that means for her, I imagine all of us are coming up with all sorts of opinions and thoughts and judgments about what she should do and who she should talk to and how she should get help or you know, not do something in the future. And I think that just listening to that story and hearing it and giving her the chance to be heard for what is true for her is one of the most important things that each of us can do for someone in our life that's had an abortion. And yes, our friends or sisters that have had that experience, their story may or may not be as heartbreaking as the one that Michelle shared, but we can also do the same thing. We can listen.
So Michelle, you're not
alone. Validate. You can let people know they're not alone. You can affirm their feelings. And you can talk with them about what kind of things they want to do to take care of themselves. What are some self-care options? How can they move through that grief or that guilt? And make sure that you're really meeting that person, your loved one, where they are. And it's not about your own judgments about what she should do and paying attention to what she needs, and just being with her through that process can be incredibly healing and transformative.
I agree.
And Michelle, I hope some of that was helpful.
Thanks, it was.
Okay.
It was. I know they're right. It's just getting it through your head is another thing.
Well, getting help to get it through your head sometimes is necessary. So somebody to pound the nail.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Good luck to you, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's see if we can talk now with, this is Laura. Laura with us from Houston and, Boston in Massachusetts. I'll learn to read soon.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I had an abortion about 25 years ago. I was living in England at the time and had it there. And frankly, I have no shame about it. I'm sorry. It's my decision. I feel like it was important for me to do at that time in my life. I expressed to the interviewer that I think some of the reasons might be, number one, that I was raised Jewish, and I never felt any of the negative energy around it. Secondly, I'm in Massachusetts, which isn't exactly a conservative state. And I just feel like it was my decision with my husband, who at the time wasn't my husband, but it was our decision. We made the decision we had to make at the time.
And there's no reason to feel ashamed for not being ashamed.
I don't, not in the least. I'll tell anybody, except my mother-in-law.
Why not your mother-in-law?
Because she's a devout Catholic.
And may not...
Only one.
And at that point, there are some lines that aren't crossable.
That's right.
Yeah.
Other than that, told our kids...
Was that a difficult conversation?
No. Not at all. I'm sorry. I know it sounds callous, but no. It was a part of our life decision-making, and we explained the context, and that's all. end?
This is Aspen, and I'd love to jump in because I just want to recognize that two women just called this radio show and spoke their truth. And they are both real, and they are both to be believed, and they are both to be listened to. And just as the caller who's on right now, there is no reason to feel ashamed for not being ashamed. Absolutely deserves support and respect for her approach and her experience and her openness and her frankness with the people in her lives and her family. And, you know, equally is Michelle and the guilt and the pain that she feels, that both of these are abortion stories. Both of these are the kinds of things that we don't often hear in our public dialogue. And both of these women are representative of so many other women who have experienced an abortion.
And I would also jump in and say that, Laura, you probably, I'm going to guess, represent a minority of women. What you're basically saying is, my moral code instructed me that this was not wrong, therefore I feel no shame. And, of course, that's
exactly
the definition
right.
of guilt. Your
that's
guilt
exactly
is when you
right.
violate your own moral code. Right.
That's right. And I was raised by fantastic parents who passed on different moralities that, you know, highly strict moral code, but not around this. And
yeah.
I always felt supported.
I think the vast majority of women who abort probably are not built like you. I think most women probably do have a moral code that says vaguely or more explicitly this is not a good idea, but they need to and they decide to. And I think that's the source of the confusion afterwards.
Yeah,
and that's what has to be resolved afterwards.
Okay. Laura, thank you very much for the call.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. And good luck to you, too. Bye-bye. Let's talk now with David. David's with us from Hot Springs in South Dakota.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is a wonderful program and a topic that's been long in the shadows. I and my girlfriend and I, we went through an abortion when I was 22. I'm 40 now, and it took me probably 15 to 20 years to be able to talk about it with anyone. My family was not aware that it happened, and they still aren't. There was a lot of taboo, I think. I grew up very Catholic. I was Irish Catholic. My girlfriend was Italian Catholic. And there is a lot of pressure, I think, from her family actually to get it, but not much to get the abortion, have the abortion, but not so much as to discuss it and discuss options and discuss feelings. And
to pretend it never happened.
Exactly, exactly. Just, you're not married, it happened out of wedlock, you don't want to deal with this, just have it. And I've dealt with the repercussions of that decision all my life, and I don't have any children today, and it's not because of that, it's just that those are other circumstances. But it's definitely a burden that I carried around for a long time. I looked at myself as not a man for standing up and doing the right thing and getting married and being a dad. So I felt it was rushed through. There was no counseling at the abortion clinic for either one of us, and there was a very negative connotation for her. They almost tried to be very negative with it, didn't offer any kind of pain relief, were very abrupt and harsh with us over the whole thing. There was no counseling or any of that type of thing. So,
and are you guys still together?
Oh, no. It put a huge rift between us. We tried to maintain a relationship, but we didn't even talk about it after the fact. It was something that was immediately pushed under the rug, and our relationship suffered, and there was no communication, and we probably broke up, you know, several months after that.
You know, Arthur, go ahead.
Go ahead, Terry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say Arthur Shostak wrote a book called Men and Abortion. He did some interesting work in the late 80s, early 90s, where he found that about 70% of relationships broke up within 3 months of an abortion. I think that since 1973, men have really been instructed, you really don't have an opinion here. This is a woman's choice. It's her body. It's her choice. Which means it's a unilateral decision. It's very confusing for a man because he feels that the right thing to do is to step back and say, whatever you decide, I will support, at the same time that a woman badly wants her boyfriend or husband to step up to the plate and say, this is what I would like. I'll figure out a way if you want this child. But men often don't feel that they have the right to do that. It's complicated.
Aspen Baker, do a lot of men call exhaust? Exhale, excuse me.
Interesting slip.
Yeah.
About 10% of our callers are male callers. We wow. also hear from significant others, which includes mothers, sisters, friends. But we do hear from a lot of men, and they run the gamut as equally as the women, the calls from the women run the gamut. I think there's often that sense of men really caring for their partners and really wanting to be supportive of that decision and are often supportive of it themselves and can feel really sad about it. Oftentimes they're calling because they just want to be the best husband, boyfriend, partner that they can be and are looking for information about the right things to say, you know, how to listen supportively and respectfully. And then, you know, just to say their own story. I mean, I think so much of what happens on the Exhale Talk Line is people getting that story off their chest. You know, the reason we're doing this show, or you guys are doing this show today on NPR, is to give people the chance to tell their story and say what it was like for them, because this is often what's so missing in the public dialogue. And so people use the talk line like that, and men call the line to tell their story just as the women do.
David, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. We're talking about abortions and why people don't talk about them so much. Our guests are Terry Reiser and Aspen Baker. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email. Actually, this is from Kelly on our blog. I had an abortion about 4 months ago, she wrote. I'm a 24-year-old law student. My partner and several of my close friends were by my side as I went through the difficult process of getting an abortion in Ohio. I told my father, my college-age brothers, and most of my friends afterwards, I feel so blessed to have had the support and love of so many. I feel a great responsibility to talk about my abortion experience, to end the stigma of sharing this common experience, and to assure other men and women that it is not scary, it is not immoral, and for some of us, it is not a difficult, fraught decision. I've not told my mother. She's Catholic, and I know she wouldn't forgive me for my choice. It breaks my heart to know that I can never tell her that I had an abortion. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Jennifer. Jennifer with us from Charleston in South Carolina.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, great. I'm 60 years old, and in my 20s, I had two abortions. And they were the context of those abortions. I did not feel that the choice was mine. I felt that it was a worst case choice. I mean, I felt pressured. Nobody asked me how I felt, and of course that was really some time ago now. And so I didn't have anybody to talk about the feelings before. And afterwards, again, there was nobody to talk to. And in my 30s, I had two miscarriages. So in the end, I ended up having no children, which I think is also an important issue. And so at this stage of my life, it's not really guilt, but there is a grief that lingers because you feel that there'll be another shot at it. And in the end, there was no other shot at it. So now, from my position, I try to talk to the woman of my own age about it. And the truth is, nobody wants to hear. They don't. If they are pro-choice, and I believe that women have the choice, although it is a very difficult choice for some people, including myself, women simply don't want to hear, get over it, get better. So what? Mm-hmm. You're the problem. The problem is with you. And I think what some of the people on the program have talked about is that there's no public grief. We have lost children in our family, not me, but other women in my family. And that was a very public and grief that other people can relate to. But this is such a private, silent grief. And I think that's where the problem comes in. And I would certainly like to have some reaction from your guests who are saying very wonderful things. say.
Well, thank you very much for that. And I'm afraid, in fact, Jennifer, we're going to have to give you the last word because we're out of time on this. I'd like to thank you and all of the people who called and got on the air and all the people who called and wrote to us and did not get on the air. We thank you very much for that. And to our guest as well, Aspen Baker, Executive Director of Exhale. She joined us from the Journalism School at the University of California. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Terry Reiser, a marriage and family therapist with us from member station KCLU in Thousand Oaks, California. Appreciate your time today.
You're so welcome.
Coming up, Wall Street has had a wild ride already today. It's only 2:40. We'll take your questions and read your letters about what it all means. This is NPR News.